Rise and shine, soccer fans. It's time for the best freaking soccer show in the world, or at least the continental U.S. From the Dynamo to Mexico to Hope Solo, the Firkin Soccer Show on 1560 The Game has North America covered. Brought to you by the Firkin and Phoenix English Style Pub. Now, here's your host, Jen Cooper.
Are you ready for some football, Houston? Oh, not that football.
Wait, is there some kind of other football today? There's something going on, right? The Revolution are playing the Red Bulls.
The New England Revolutions are playing the New York Red Bulls.
Yeah. Well, wait, neither one of those teams has ever won anything, so why would they be playing in Indianapolis?
All right, well, that's that other football.
Yeah, we don't really want to talk
about that. F-U-T-B-O-L, football. This is Jen Cooper here, a.k.a. The Keeper. I've got Joe Offenbacher with me and Ray Escamilla, and we're going to talk about Dynamo preseason action and player news, brief look at maybe some other news around the league, and most importantly for today's show, we're going to talk about WPS suspending their 2012 season right on the heels of the women's national team qualifying for the Olympics. And we're even going to have Beau Duret, one of the top reporters of women's soccer. He'll be calling in around 7:30 to talk about WPS women's national team. It's a pretty big issue, but we're gonna get into that later. First, let's get the men out of the way. If you have any thoughts about Dynamo or WPS, give us a call, 713-439-1560. But first, let's talk hometown team. Let's talk Dynamo Stadium getting grass. And seats.
Right?
Who knew?
Are you not excited at this point? I mean, it's, you know, we've had the, yes,
and we're getting rain
walls
for the grass.
Yes, and we're even taking care of that, so we're beating the drought at its own game by, you know, actually raining on grass that we're in the process of laying. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. It's, you know, we've worked so hard on so many levels to get the stadium built. We've watched walls come up. We've watched all this stuff, and now we get the word that, hey, we're putting in grass and seats. I mean, how can you not be excited at this point?
And orange seats, no less. If you haven't seen the picture, we put it on the Keeper Notes Facebook page. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a great thing. We're getting closer, Houston. We're getting closer.
And yesterday, we're only 3 months and 1 week away from May 12th. DC United at Dynamo. Yesterday, Dynamo beat HBU in yesterday's scrimmage. Well, there I go repeating myself. In the scrimmage at HASP, which is Houston Amateur Sports Park, defeated them 4-0. It was mostly trialists, and it was all trialists who scored the goals. And you guys were out there. Tell me what it was like.
Well, it was rainy.
yes, that should probably be mentioned first. We did have quite the rain event yesterday.
That's why they have the all-weather field out there.
That's right, and which was actually a good thing for the game yesterday that it moved to that particular location. But there were quite a few Dynamo fans that showed up, which was actually, given the weather conditions and stuff, we're like, okay, we're going to see the usual suspects, and then you turn around and look and go,
hey,
there's actually some folks that came out no matter what the rain is. But Ray, go ahead, give us your impressions of what you saw out there.
No, like I said, it was very impressive, the Dynamo, you know, Eder Ariola. I mean, he was run up and down. He was it was very impressive. You know, I think him and Chris Rolfe, you know, they did quite a showing.
You think most of those guys are going to get to go on the California trip?
That's kind of my feeling yesterday. With the, not saying they're all going to go, but the reason most of the trialists played yesterday and the first teamers were, okay, we're just going to stretch and we're going to run around and we're going to do some stuff. But go ahead, kids.
We're going to stand here and look pretty.
Yeah, go ahead and do what you need to do, because that's probably, let's be honest, that's probably what Dom used that for. Said, okay, we've got X amount of trialists. Let's give them one last chance to impress before we take off on our journey around the U.S., and that's probably what's going
to
happen.
Because the Dynamo head out to Southern California probably tomorrow. They're going to play none other than Montreal Impact Wednesday. I'm excited about that. I wish that would be televised.
Preseason scrimmage game, I kind of tend to think there's going to be more media interest than usual.
I hope so. I hope we get some good pictures, maybe some video.
Oh, I'm sure. Montreal has done a pretty good job of, even when they did their little excursion into Mexico, of putting some stuff up. So
we're going to play the Impact, Galaxy, Portland Timbers, San Jose Earthquakes. Basically,
Portland Timbers. Here's another issue. Why, you know,
in a 1 week span in Southern California. Yeah. So, and then we'll come back home. We got one last scrimmage before they go to Florida again at Haas. But so let's talk Portland and the player who said, no way, Houston.
What's there? Something going on with that? Yeah, there was, actually. It's it's one of those other things that's kind of sort of typical Dynamo. We had a transfer window that closed over in Europe, which really has not much bearing on us. But the Dynamo is kind of quietly, you know, we've moved some money aside. We're doing some things. We're looking. Hey, let's get Chris Boyd. Chris Boyd winds up going to Portland. Some of the fans, you know, took that to heart and went, oh, my God, it's a weather-related issue or this and that. I think it's a lot deeper than that because of the tools, the things that Portland can show somebody that we're in the process of still building. So it's kind of hard for us to show.
So they have great video of a full stadium of people chanting, and don't have a video of a new stadium full yet of people chanting.
We have videos of, hey, we have a bunch of people cheering, but it's really a half-full stadium because that stadium was bigger than, you know, so but there's a number of factors, and who knows.
The other football thing, lines. And
football lines on occasion and things like that. But the other thing that I thought, and I really didn't think about this till yesterday, when the other piece of Timbers MLS news broke that one of their young DP signings actually has a knee injury and has to be on the shelf for the rest of the year. And, you know, because initially it was like, I'm not coming to the Dynamo, but I'm kind of sort of backing out of this whole MLS thing, pursuing other offers or whatever. The Timbers in the Valencia case, that drug on for a little while. So maybe that had some bearing on it too. But who knows? We'll see.
All right, well, stay with us, Houston. We'll be back on Houston's Best Sports Talk to talk more about the Dynamo.
Got a soccer question? Call in and ask Jen. Let's get back to the show. The Birkin Soccer Show, that is, on 1560 The Game.
All right, soccer fans, we're talking Houston Dynamo and a little bit Portland Timbers, talking about how we lost, in a sense, Chris Boyd to Portland Timbers. Do you think it's lost is too strong a word, Joe?
Well, to me personally, I thought, you know, and some fans see this differently, but it's kind of hard to lose somebody you never have. Right? I mean, if you really look at it that way.
Okay, so we're the 13-year-old girl that was obsessed with someone who was never interested
in
her.
That's right.
Okay.
Something like that. You know, it's like, hey, we had interest in obtaining the services of this guy, but for whatever reason.
We took him to a Rockets game or something,
well,
right?
We did something, and then, you know, it's like, well, maybe we should have took him to the Texans game.
I think the major thing was, like, it's like the Dynamo will continue or trying to get more and more guys, and then they all fell through. And then another one fell through. And then another one fell through. So it's like, and then, like, okay, maybe he just doesn't want to come to MLS. Lo and behold, he goes to Portland.
Yeah, but here's the question. See, and this is the thing with Chris Boyd, because at this particular point in time, he's kind of an unknown quantity. He could be a guy that comes out and scores 10, 12, 14, 15 goals this year, or he could be a guy that scores 2, because he really hasn't played in some time. So that's the other piece of the
coin.
He was,
the all-time leading scorer for the Scottish Premier
League?
Well, he was, but then he went to Turkey.
And then, you know, there's contract issues and all that. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that's going on. That's why I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, some people were like, oh, my God, we're missing out on, you know, Messi. He's not coming now because he's going to Portland. It's like, well, we don't know that.
Right.
You know, the guy did score a lot, but a lot of people did score a lot before they ever came here.
Well, and I think a lot of fans have all been holding their collective breath since the announcement or the creation of the DP back in 2007. When are we getting one? When are we getting one? When are we getting one? And last year, there was even that statement from AEG saying, all right, you know, we told Dynamo that they can spend as much money as they want.
And I think they're working on it, but I think it's one of those things where it has to be the right fit.
Yeah.
And then you know, you can at
and
that
that's
point,
not a cliche, people.
No,
it it has to be a right fit, and we know that Dom is really clear about it's got to work for the team. He's all about the team. You know, does the locker room get along? It's not one star and the cast of characters.
And that's where
the whole team.
You could go and say, okay, well, you know, maybe make the argument. Maybe we're focused in the wrong direction. Maybe we should be looking at other places. I mean, right now we have a huge Colombian influx into MLS. And we're focused, historically speaking, on the Dynamo side, that not necessarily some of the bigger signings, but we bring in people from the British Isles, which are people that Dom and John and other people
usually
know
Scots.
And have you know, some kind of experience with, but they're not big-time guys. But we
well,
did
do you think
have
they feel a little burned with South America because of Caraccio? In 2008.
Yeah, but, you know, that's one of those where it's like the never-ending saga with Landin. I mean, the potential is one thing, but a player reaching his potential, it's no different than any other sport in the world. You can have the best, you know, resume coming out of college or whatever, that or junior level that says, oh, my God, you're going to be the next big thing.
As Jerry Maguire said, some of them pop, and some of them don't.
That's what I'm saying. Some make it, some don't, you know, and who knows. But we had another player here that was of a higher price, if you will, and Ray actually did some research this week and brought
my
a little
intrepid
bit of
reporter.
Yes, brought a little bit of excitement to the fan base.
All right, because I mean, I was like, I saw Carlo Costi tweet, it's like in Spanish, in Mexico, it's like, eh, let me just see if I can entice him to come back to the Dynamo, or just see if I can get a little nugget, see if he bites, and then lo and behold, he sends me a direct message saying, yeah, I'll be there next week. I'm like, what?
You'll be in Houston? Why?
Right. So I was like, I didn't say Houston. I said, are you going to be with the Dynamo next week? So I was like, okay, let me just reconfirm that this is the right guy, did all my things.
No one's making up this Twitter account.
And he didn't mean the Carolina Dynamo?
No.
I'm just saying.
And then I saw all these pictures, all the timelines lined up, and it's like, okay, I'm going to post it. And then, like, you know, I saw all these, you know, all this interest. Like, oh, yeah, why not? Why not Carlo Costi? You know, like Dominic Oduro, you know, he's like, when he felt that his scoring spree was so good, he wanted to test out the European markets. He came back and like, hey, nobody wants to take me. It's like, apparently they saw my other...
A year early.
They saw my other highlights of me whiffing, you know? Yeah. So I guess like, so he came back, I'm assuming on his hands and knees, hey, Dom, can I have another shot? It's like, all right, I guess we need a speedy forward. And then the first game of the season, whiff, and he's out of there.
Yeah. There. Well, and you followed up on the Costi thing to see what the Dynamo had to say.
Like I said, like the next day, it was like, since it was like late at night, it's like I emailed Chris Canetti like through email just so I would, you know, make sure it was legit. You know, so as a I have the conversation I had with Costi. I know it's the valid account, and he said, no, it's not true. And I was like, oh, where'd you hear that? No, it's not true.
But what do you expect Chris to say at this point? And that was something that, you know, I brought up in a different conversation elsewhere.
That's what he's supposed to say.
But he didn't say yes or no. And it's like, well, did you see the guy sign yet? I mean, that's the way it normally goes. You really don't confirm, deny, unless you get something on paper. Perfect example is FC Edmonton in the NASL, to get away from the Costi thing for a second. They put out that they've signed a young Chilean on a loan agreement for the year. Turns out yesterday they put out something that we have to send a young Chilean back to Chile to get another medical exam because he failed the one here. So we're kind of sort of terminating it. You know, but the point is, Chris is not going to say, yes, he is, until he can say, all right, we've dotted, you know, I's, crossed T's, we're presenting the player, everything's good to go. What do you expect him to say?
Like, I didn't expect any different, but it was like, let's just see what he says.
Yeah. Well, and you have to do your due diligence, again, to make sure that that's a real account, and, you know, what does the person in charge, you know, have to say?
But would he be a good fit if he came back?
No, but definitely the Dynamo need forwards.
Absolutely.
You know, like, the Ching is gone. You know, we don't have, like I said, we have so many unknowns. I think last year the unknowns was that goalkeeper, and Talia proved us wrong. You know, he was very solid. And Tyler Derrick is a competent backup whenever it was an MLS action. So now, who's going to step up with the Dynamo at forward? You know,
and we have seen that Dom will go back to a known over an unknown, where it's like, hey, I've got this need to fill. It might be short term, but let's take this.
So wait,
this,
you're
this
saying Nate Jagpois coming back?
Neguena 2.0.
Well, we've already been down that road, but yeah, no, it's you know, but it's a valid point.
Dalglish is going to come out of retirement.
Well, now Paul's actually got some stuff to do, but we'll talk about Paul's situation next week when we do our regional roundup, just to give ourselves a little bit of an advertisement on what we're doing. But yeah, that would be interesting. There's definitely a need at forward, but you know, Dynamo fans, I know we'd like to see God knows what to make a splash. Be patient.
Yeah.
Okay, the teams put some money aside; they're still looking. Just bear with them.
And talking about former Dynamen, let's talk about Deiro. What's going on with Deiro?
It felt like it was deja vu. You know, Deiro in a contract, like, he's not happy with the salary.
That never happens.
What is the dispute?
Well, Deiro's, it's the last year of his MLS contract that he's got at the current pay scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the things when he moved from Toronto to New York to D.C. last year, for various reasons that are all kind
we
of
got,
sort of
we got New York De Rosario jerseys at Soccer for All about a week after the D.C. United transfer.
Which is perfect timing, you know. It's like, we got him, and he's no longer with us. But it's like Ray said, it's kind of a story that has been going on for years. And the argument amongst MLS fans, and especially Dynamo fans, is should Deiro be paid at a level of a DP or more, for all he's done for the league, what he's meant for the league, how he has an impact on different games historically and stuff like that. And you could say yes, But you can also, at the same time, you know, where people still go, well, you know, we traded Darrow to Toronto for a bag of chips. And it's like, well, it's not that simple, because the contract issues in MLS are not such that you can just say, you know what, we want that bag of chips and you're going to Toronto. There was probably more involved with that that led to that.
Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about women's professional soccer. Canceling the 2012 season. And later on, we'll be talking to Bo Duray. Stay with us on Houston's Best Sports Talk. I just love your sexy ways now, baby. You know my love will never stop now, baby.
Just put your love in my box now, baby. Let's get back to Jen and the guys on the Firkin Soccer Show. Brought to you by the Firkin and Phoenix English Style Pub. 1560 The Game. Houston's Best Sports Talk.
All right, Houston, we're here to talk about one of my favorite subjects, women's soccer, specifically women's professional soccer. And there was a big announcement this Monday that women's professional soccer said they were suspending operations for the 2012 season. They're not folding the league. They were saying we have to hold off on the 2012 season due to some legal issues. And in case you haven't been following all the wonderful drama online of legal documents and he said, she said, she said kind of action. Back in December 2010, Dan Borislow of Magic Jack, all those great Magic Jack commercials, he bought the Washington Freedom team from the Hendricks family, or most of it from the Hendricks family, and moved the team to South Florida, renamed it Magic Jack. And during the course of the 2011 season, there was a lot of drama related to that team in terms of just look at me like, what do you mean a lot of drama?
Just a touch. And just to give you a little background on Jen's background here, for those male soccer aficionados that are going, WPS, why are we talking about WPS? Trust me, folks, you will learn a lot about the workings of soccer, not just on the women's side, if you read into all of this documentation.
A lot of this has very little to do with the fact that it's a women's soccer team.
Right. That's just ancillary. It deals with a lot of other issues as well.
So over the course of 2011, there were a lot of issues where Borislow was calling the police on reporters who wanted to speak to players, refused to let players post on Twitter and Facebook. His field wasn't regulation size. There was no press box, no website, no front office staff, no phone number to call for tickets, not enough seating, yada, yada, yada. It's a long story. We're not going to rehash all of it here. But bottom line, the league terminated his franchise at the end of October. He filed an injunction, a suit. I don't know. I'm not going to get into all the legal terms. But there's been an ongoing legal dispute. And with them terminating his franchise, it put the league down to 5 teams, which meant they needed another waiver from U.S. Soccer, because you're supposed to have 8 teams to be a Division I team. So they've had a lot of issues. So, Joe, can you, in your masterful legal research that you've done this week, distill...
Yes.
What's happened just in the last few weeks of the drama that is WPS and Dan Borislow?
With my spare time dealing with the Stanford case but I'm curious. to be precise, it's I've read more legal documents in the last week and a half or so on this matter
than
I probably hope to ever see in the rest of my life. So if any of y'all want to sue me, let's move aside from that whole thing. But what we basically have right now is we're at the point where the league chose to terminate his franchise. He sued that the league didn't follow all the proper steps. In order
to the league's own documents.
According to the league's own documents and procedures, they didn't follow those procedures, even though that's a matter of great debate and probably a lawsuit for another time, as to whether you should have arbitration first, later, whichever. That was the first piece. Now we're at the point where none of this matters at this particular point because the league has chosen to suspend operations. However, what we're in court arguing now, and Bo will hopefully enlighten us all on some of this confusing stuff, is that he contends that there was a settlement between the league and himself / his team to play exhibition games the next 2 years, which would allow the league to play, would allow him to play, and everybody is kumbaya and happy and
And the national team players that he has in his pocket.
Which is another issue we're going to get to.
In his pocket.
Yeah, he's got some interesting pockets with some of the legal documents that have come out. But that's basically the bone of contention now. Was there a valid agreement in place, a settlement, if you will, as to some of the legal terms, or was there not? The league contends that this was all subject to the U.S. Soccer Federation approval. Borislav says, well, no, we had an agreement. What the Federation says really doesn't matter, just like it doesn't matter what FIFA says about all the stuff that he should have in order to operate a team.
Right.
So we're basically at a standstill now in the sense that we have yet another hearing scheduled to see where we're at with the settlement hearings. And, if you thought, you could make this into a TV movie, I don't see how you can't, no matter what network you put it on.
I think this could be a film, and it could be up for an Academy Award for if someone whoever writes the screenplay would get.
This could give the Lord of the Rings a heck of a run for the money, because it just goes on and on. But it's that's like I said, and I'm by no means a legal expert, and some of it is kind of open to contention. The league's lawyers say this means this, and his lawyers say no, this means
that.
Well,
and bottom line, if you want to follow the issue, the two best websites to stay in touch with this are Bo's website, sportsmyriad.com, and allwhitekit.com, which is run by Jenna Pell from Houston. Kind of two really great sites for women's soccer and this issue specifically. And I also want to talk about how is this going to impact the women's national team. So they defeated Canada last Sunday in Vancouver 4-0. So
you were actually there and got to take in the amazing atmosphere.
Yeah, CONCACAF regional champs, bragging rights. It was a great game. They looked on point in a way that I have not seen them look in a long time. Their finishing was excellent. You kind of saw them struggle through the tournament, and I know someone might laugh when you see the goal differential and say they were struggling. It's like, I'm sorry, connecting against Dominican Republic is different from connecting and finishing against Canada. The last three times we played Canada, they went to overtime. This was 3-0 after 30 minutes. Now, Canada didn't hang their heads and go home. They kept trying.
Oh, absolutely.
And Hope Sola had to make three amazing saves, right. and it was nice to see the team playing so sharply and seeing some different players on the field. Alex Morgan gets only her third international start. You have Kelly O'Hara, who only made the Women's World Cup team because Lindsay Tarpley tore ACL, being converted from forward to right back and having a great game. You have Lori Lindsay, who was someone whose career would not be around if it were not for the WSA 10 years ago, taking the start over Shannon Box. So, great game. But what all of this is going to mean for the women's national team, and ironically, in a way, it doesn't hurt them, and then it means that the players can focus on preparations for the Olympics. You know, there was a question of how the WPS is going to schedule, given the Olympics in late July, early August. But it also means that really only players who have already been in camp are going to have a chance to make the roster. There's a little bit of fringe beyond the existing Women's World Cup roster, from 2011, right, that have a legitimate shot. You're not going to have, any April or May games where someone's going to break through and Pia Sundhage is going to go, hey, maybe I need to bring that person in, much like Shannon Box in 2003. Her first ever call-up to the U.S. national team was the Women's World Cup roster.
Little thing we want you to tackle. I want you to come in for this.
Hey, you want to come to this? And what's funny is she had got into grad school and was going to retire from soccer. Well, so 10 years later.
There's a lot of irony in the women's game. I mean, there's a lot of irony in the men's game. But this entire situation, like you said, this can actually work in the women's national team favor because they can
It works both for and against. It's great. Long term,
well,
it's
the same thing with the league. The league would have had to take a break during the summer
or at least something
to make some kind of adjustment for the Olympics. Now they don't. Now, would you think that they would prefer to play in some capacity? I would tend to think so. But with all the different things that are going on, maybe as bad as the time, any time you have to suspend, it's bad timing. But if you had to suspend, would it be better this year? Next year?
And it's important to note that the league does not cease to exist. The board of directors say they're all committed to coming back for next year. And we know that there are other teams out there that have stepped out of the league that still exist as semi-pro clubs. So it's not necessarily over. Right. However, who knows what's going to happen with the legal issues, because that's a huge financial drain. So we're just going to have to see what comes with that. And I do like to point out to people the difference between WPS and WSA. Both, I think, you know, bit off way more than they can chew. But WPS did learn a little bit from WSA in terms of, you know,
it's progress.
It's private investors, not public investors. So they knew that they had to be patient. You know, they went into smaller venues. They had the benefit of, hey, you know, Fox Soccer Channel exists now, so we can be on that as opposed to random channels. And hey, they had all their uniforms from Puma as opposed to all different sponsors. So progress. Anyway.
But we're going to get into that issue in a little bit, too, as far as to, you know, what particular state should women's soccer be at in this country.
And when we come back, we're going to have on the phone Bo Duray, my favorite women's soccer beat writer, and I'm not just sucking up. We're going to ask him all about this stuff. So stay with us on Houston's Best Sports Talk.
He's got a million-dollar car. He's got a 37-year-old guitar. He's got a family video here when you're off. Just living on a Sunday morning.
Soccer never sleeps, so why should you? Let's get back to the Firkin Soccer Show, brought to you by the Firkin and Phoenix English Style Pub on 1560 The Game. Now, here's the keeper, Jen Cooper.
All right, Houston, we're continuing our discussion of all the WPS drama, and on the phone we have Bo Duer. I'm so sorry, Bo, that I made you out to be French. Are you with us?
I'm French. when you go back in the generation. That's fine.
Bo was easy like that. He's like me. We can be anything you want us to be. We can be French. We can be German. We can, well, we maybe not Italian. But
yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm part French, part Scottish. Families marrying together probably more often than they should. Back in the old days. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, and I just want to let our listeners know that, you know, you've covered women's soccer a lot for USA Today and now for ESPN and ESPNW, and that you also have a serious background with MLS. You know, you wrote Long Range Goals, the success story of Major League Soccer. And I'm kind of hoping that you'll get to write a similar book for WPS one day.
Or whatever it's going to be called.
Right, yeah. That's certainly something I'm thinking about down the road. I have no idea when all this is going to end. Anything with stopping point in their history, WPS. I have no idea where that stopping point is going to come.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, how would you distill for the average woman soccer fan the primary conflicts that are going on right now between WPS and Dan Borso? We tried to cover it in the last segment, but I think
we need an eight-hour show.
Yeah, I think you're the expert in terms of the getting the legal documents online. How would you make that, you know, most clear? Oh, well, we lost Bo. Hopefully he'll try to call back. But so, Joe, you're my second expert. How would you make
Esquire.
Those documents most clear?
Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, in a nutshell, it kind of comes to the head is like, okay, which particular issue are we fighting at this particular point? Are we fighting the issue of, well, this is not the right way to terminate a franchise, or are we fighting the issue of, well, never mind the termination of the franchise. We've got a settlement, and we want to enforce that. The question that we're going to have for
when they really just want to drop him like a hot potato.
Yeah, and if you look at everything that's gone on with this man and the way he's ran his franchise, you know, it's a question of why did you let him into the league to begin with, which, you know, obviously probably comes down to a money issue more than anything else. And now it's how do we get rid of this guy so we can move forward?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, apparently when he's got deep pockets and he's got a legal team and apparently he's sued people over, you know, defamation, whatever you want to call it, for the Magic Jack product and whatever. So.
And I know people like to make comparisons between WPS and MLS, and the WPS pockets are just not that
it's not there.
Deep,
it's,
you know. And if, you know, if you went back 15 years, the MLS would have some very similar mm-hmm. issues if they were faced with someone like that. If their sugar daddies of Anschutz, Kraft, and Hunt hadn't been the great guys that they were, that we could have, you know, very much been in a similar issue. So I'm really hoping that, you know, we're not going to run into that.
And the interesting thing, actually, because you brought that point up, you know, to where years ago MLS wasn't in any position either, was there was actually talk at one point
of a WMLS.
Of a WMLS, and, you know, for whatever reason, that entire thing never came to fruition.
Well, WSA won the race to get the Division I sanctioning. But we've got Bo back
all
on
right.
the phone.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was worried about waking up myself. It appears that I'm awake, but my cell phone isn't. So,
well, you're awake now.
Right.
Well, so how would you distill for the average woman soccer fan the primary issue or issues between WPS and Dan Borislow? I know that's a big question.
It is, and I heard you cover some of it, and a lot of it's in the legal documents that people want to read for themselves, but there were a lot of rule violations, I guess we should say allegedly. I mean, it's clear that there were disagreements over them, and then that just went on and on until midway through the summer, WPS started to say to Borislow, look, we need to, you know, we're going to start hearing whether we should just terminate you. And that's where the legal issues began, and that's really where we are at this point.
And one of the questions that we all, you know, has come to mind for us, and especially for Jen, that's followed the women's soccer so much more intensely than some of us have, and I'll be freely to admit, until just recently with all these troubles, is one of the things that struck me is we really haven't heard much from any of the U.S. women's national team players, particularly the ones outside of Abby, who did make a short statement this week that kind of contradicted what she said right after the Costa Rica game. You know, you have any thoughts on that, Bo?
Well, I think there are certainly a few people on this team who are controversy averse. There's one in particular who's not, and she's saying that's Hope Solo. And she's saying that she wasn't there after the World Cup and hasn't made any commitments, and that's pretty much all she's saying. And as for the others, I wouldn't expect Christy Rampone to come out and make some big statement. It's just not her style. She uses her Twitter feed mostly to congratulate fellow FRS-sponsored athlete Tim Tebow on whatever he's done recently, or to share pictures of Riley. So really that leaves Abby, and Abby clearly is very close with Borislow, and it it depends on whether they're simply so close that she has a hard time dealing with the rest of the situation. It's probably not fair to say it's all just because they had nice salaries and plush condos. I mean, some of them may seem to think that Borislow represents the future, and so they're sort of clinging to that, and then it's just up for others to weigh in and say whether or not that's correct.
And some may be biding their time to see how...
There's got to be something more here. We just don't know what it is.
It's hard to say.
Well, one thing Joe and I have been discussing a lot this week is, why does the U.S. need a Division I women's league?
Well, I think you talked about it a little bit that in... for this year, this isn't the worst year for WPS to take off. In some respects, the fact that it dragged out into this season, dragged out, they had a draft and went through everything and then realized they couldn't do it. That's not really good from a credibility point of view.
Right.
But in the long term, certainly it's important for player development. You look at players who weren't getting much of a look on the national team, like Lori Lindsay, like Becky Sauerbrunn, like Megan Rapinoe, who really played their way either into the pool or back into the pool through their WPS play. And then if you go back to the WUSA, the classic example is Shannon Botts, who really wasn't in the picture at all until the WUSA. And you could even make the case for some player that Dan Borislow seems very fond of, a tall target forward who is all over the place and was third in player of the year balloting this year.
And wasn't even the first-round draft pick in WSA.
Yeah, right. This is somebody who had just a little little sniff of the national team before the WUSA and then really came on. Now, she did impress as much with her national team play in 2002 and 2003 as she did in WUSA. But is it fair to say that WSA helped her not just get a look, but perhaps gain the confidence to go on and play with what was at that time a very well-established talent pool?
Well, Joe and I were talking about that yesterday, that the luck that Abby had by being drafted to the Washington Freedom and getting 2 years of playing time with Mia Hamm. And that was such a significant influence on her, and I think the thing that took her to the next level. It's like, you're a great forward, but you got to be more than a great forward.
It certainly helped, and it's important to remember that Abby does require being on a pretty good team. And, you know, if you looked at her in Washington the last 2 years in WPS, she had good performances, but I wouldn't say that she was dominant. And,
right.
And that was even with some very good players on that team as well, like, you know, Lori Lindsay 1 year, Hamari Sala, who was the player of the year in
yeah.
the world, and Sonia Bonpastor, who was in the top 10. There was certainly a lot of good talent on that team, but there were a lot of frustrating games for Abby at that time, and a lot of times where it just wasn't going her way, and she would start to pout and argue with the ref, and you know she can get taken out of a game, and so yeah, I think you're right. It was very important. If she had not been on a, if she had not had the WSA, if she was just trying to you know go in with you know 5 minutes after Shannon McMillan or someone had gone to the bench in a national team game, she might not have had the same opportunities to develop.
And, you know, it's a good thing that you mentioned that whole thing with the development aspect of the national team. And we're actually fortunate we get to see the women's national team up in Frisco next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of, you know, tie that into our next question. How do you think this impacts their preparation for the Olympics now with, you know, the league basically being on hiatus, suspension, whatever you want to call it?
And also, how does it affect the people that are not in that pool?
Correct.
Right. Well, for the people who are sort of on the in, I would say, and you know, for the Wombats, for the Rampones, and the Botses, and so forth, in some respects, they get it better. You know, it was always going to be difficult to go play WPS games. WPS plays on some really bad fields, and there are always disagreements between club and country officials and medical staffs and so forth. So they get to avoid all that. Now, I would point out that that argument is undercut a little bit when you have Abby Wambach playing every game up in Canada, 5 games in 9 days, including the meaningless final against Canada, and you have Hope Solo, who in one game looks like she's about to fall over and needs medical attention, then she's right back out there for another meaningless game. So at some point you have to ask, are you hurt or are you not?
Yeah.
And but, you know, the going word is that, you know, both Wambach and Solo had have some long-term injury problems. Shannon Botts near the end of her career, and you know she's someone in the run-up to the World Cup. I thought she looked horrible, and she was. It looked like Carly Lloyd was doing all the running for her, and then all of a sudden she gets to Germany, and bless her heart, Shannon comes up with a series of very good games,
right.
And so I think she's just hoping she can do that one more time. And she is a very classy midfielder and always has been.
Well, especially with the Olympics coming so close on the heels of Women's World Cup, and we saw this with kind of 03, 04, and 07, 08. It's like the players are all right, my last hurrah. I can squeeze. I can last another year,
and
then it's
over. I can
make
one more tournament.
Right, and they can do that. And, of course, Rampone looks like she could be Christine Lilly and play till, you know, she's had, you know, 30 kids or whatever. But now the real...
Will those work in a collective bargaining agreement?
The kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, the U.S. national team did pretty well with, you know, nanny systems and things like that. They'd have people go out and take care of babies on the road, and then you had people doing it informally. Like I did a story on Tina Ellertson at the end of last year, and when she was on the national team, her husband, Chris, looked after the Rampone and the Markgraf kids.
Perfect.
So yeah, they do a pretty good job, you know, taking care of the kids on the national team. But here's the question I have is that you've seen a fair amount of thinly veiled sniping on Twitter between people who have been kind of on the fringe of the national team pool, people who used to be on the national team pool. You know, there are people who ran up and congratulated Ella Massar for her blog, and that included Tasha Kai, of course, who certainly has a lot of things that she wants to say. It
seems
like. Also, one of the people who congratulated her was Lori Kolupny. Who probably should be on the national team, but there's a whole medical back and forth there.
Right.
And then, so you have to wonder at some point, is there going to be any division on this team? And, you know, we saw in 2007 how easily frayed things can get.
Right.
And
when the background comes to the foreground.
And that's kind of why I'm thinking that we have, you know, some of the women's national team players that haven't said anything for the simple fact that, let's see where it goes, and then we'll decide and what side we're going to come out on.
Well, sure. Bo, we've just got a little bit time left, so just one quick answer from you. Do you think we're going to see any young players break out for the women's national team in 2012 like Alex Morgan did last year?
No, because I think Pia is pretty well set. I think the only breakouts you see would be minor tweets, like whether Kelly O'Hara can play on the back line or not. I don't think she's been really calling it. She has been calling a lot of people in. Maybe you'll see a Sydney LaRue.
Yeah, that was my best guess, was maybe Sydney, get some more time. But
right.
You know.
But, yeah, there are going to be no international year surprises, in part because there's no league. And also, I didn't really see much evidence that that Pia was paying much attention to the league last year looking for those breakout players.
Well, both, thank you so much for calling
Absolutely.
In today.
Thank
keep
you.
Keep up the good work on sportsmyriad.com. All right, Houston, we'll be back on Houston's Best Sports Talk.